Happened to meet Mitchell at an event in Iowa City, was it?
Yeah, we were right up the road. We were in downtown Iowa City.
At that brewery.
Not far away from where we're at.
Okay,
no,
yeah.
I think they called it Water Quality on Tap.
And I think you were about 12 at the time.
I was about 12 at the time.
Welcome to Dialed Up, a podcast where we take the biggest problems facing agriculture, dial the volume up, and explore what's being done to fix them. I'm your host, Eleni Paulson. The problem? Sustainable farming needs more support. Carbon markets. They're new, they're exciting, they're innovative, and, secrets out, nobody's figured them out yet. As you heard in the last episode, I attended a carbon panel discussion earlier this year at a field day hosted by Continuum Ag. I attended to hear different perspectives on the topic. I had the opportunity not only to record this panel for our podcast, but to speak with a couple panelists before the event. Here's Annie Baxter and Mitchell Hora on the development of carbon markets with the lens of agriculture. Now, you haven't heard from Annie yet, but she's a former NPR Marketplace reporter who specialized in agriculture and food industry reporting. Today, she produces a podcast with Mitchell Hora and another farmer called Fieldwork. And actually, you did hear her, right at the top of the episode, joking about Mitchell's age. Let's jump in.
Okay, so I'm Annie Baxter, and I'm a senior producer on Fieldwork, and I have been working as a journalist in public radio for about 20 years. And before starting Fieldwork, I was working for our national business program Marketplace, and I was mostly focused on food and agriculture. And when I was doing that job, I really got to develop a really strong appreciation for the trade-offs that farmers face when they're trying new things out. And when they're trying to adapt to consumer demands, that it's not just like, oh, yeah, we'll just switch things over and it's going to be easy. You know, I think the interview we did with Secretary Vilsack actually had a lot of really good points where he was saying, you know, the existing markets weren't really tailored to farmers. So kind of developing them so that they meet the needs of farmers better is seemed like a really important insight, right?
Yeah. I was really amazed by Secretary Vilsack on his understanding that, yeah, these markets today have a lot of flaws to them. They are not really ready. And I think that's why we're seeing a lot of them kind of fizzle and stuff too. And the biggest thing being we have defined additionality wrong. We copied and pasted too much from other markets. And I mean, yeah, with my involvement in Climate Action Reserve, that was 2019 when I knew nothing about carbon markets. And I just got involved and just kind of sat there and I didn't really know how to communicate it effectively. But now I've got the in on like really trying to help to get this figured out and get this sorted out. But yeah, I think that's why we're seeing a lot of farmers just saying, okay, hey, that carrot looks interesting, but a lot of them then start reading into it and they turn away pretty quick. There's a lot of other hands that are getting in the pot. And the whole point was to be able to get the farmer better control of their dollar and be able to put them in power. This regen push has been very much farmer-led and needs to remain farmer-led. And hopefully some of these carbon initiatives or other, it's not just carbon, it's overall ecosystem service markets. And it's just about scaling transparency and about scaling the farmer's ability to utilize a variety of assets, essentially coming from their farm, to be able to improve the bottom line.
It seems, more than anything, there's a need for all of us to learn more about carbon markets and how nuanced they are in the agriculture space. And of course, it takes a village to make a system that works for everyone. Now, Annie and Mitchell spoke to us from an agriculture perspective, but what about the other parts of the system? What about corporations that are facilitating and feeding into these carbon markets? Luckily, there's a panel for that too. I went to a separate panel hosted by CropLife, featuring executives from key players in ag technology, Topcon, Trimble, and John Deere. The audio quality isn't the best, so I've isolated a few pieces that best describe executives' outlook on carbon markets and where they're headed next.
Agriculture, and specifically precision agriculture and digital agriculture, is really a hero in this, right? We are more environmentally friendly. We are doing the 4 R's and putting things in the right places, and so it's now being able to use the data as a documentation of practice to create value and creating value on the farm and to those downstream farm stakeholders. And so that's a little bit about how we see.
Like I said, it's a bit tough to hear, but a gentleman from TopCon said, agriculture, specifically precision agriculture, is really the hero in all of this. We are more environmentally friendly. We are doing the background and putting things in the right place. Now, we need to use data as a documentation of practice to create value, creating value on the farm and to those downstream. I think this is a really important point. Mitchell Hora, Annie Baxter, and others from the farming perspective have all talked about the importance of gathering data in order to prove a business case for farmers. As you can see, those downstream are looking for the same data to prove the same business case. They recognize that they won't get buy-in from farmers unless they're able to demonstrate ROI. And for them, demonstrating ROI clearly is what is going to add value for them further up the chain and eventually to consumers. Here's an executive from John Deere echoing the same sentiment. Documentation, data collection is key.
At the end of the day, though, if you think about it, you know, farmers haven't had a way to keep track of how much actual carbon is in their soil, right? So if you think about this, soil as a bank of carbon, am I withdrawing from the bank or am I putting something into the bank? And so, you know, just the voice of the comments of my colleagues, it is about documentation. And it's about feeling confident, not just for the farmer, but ultimately for whoever's paying for those credits, to know that the statement of that bank is correct.
And executives from these organizations, John Deere, TopCon, Trimble, and others, especially those in the precision ag or ag tech space, they want to partner with people who can help them out.
If anyone, whether it's or through inorganic methods of partnering or through actual internal R&D, that helps us have an accurate statement of how much carbon is in that bank, is in that soil, and helps us track that at a granular level, at the right spatial resolution with confidence, those are the conversations we want to have. So it could be through remote modeling of what, depending on the soil or depending on the practices, this is what you should expect, the amount of carbon you should expect to be in there. Or it could be directly talking to a sensor manufacturer that has figured out the golden standard of sensors of how to measure carbon on the go at good spatial granularity. All that's on the table, and so I think as an industry, we have to continue to just basically think about carbon equals healthy soil. Let's make sure we can accurately measure it, we can accurately document it. And if we play a good role in that, the rest of the noise will take care of itself, I believe.
Now, in this next part, you'll hear CropLife editor Paul Schrimpf ask the executives a very important question. What actually are you doing to get involved? How are you involved in the carbon market space? This is an essential question. If we're talking about support for sustainable farming initiatives, we need to be talking about what corporations are doing to help these initiatives get off the ground. Carbon markets are one great solution to the problem, but farmers can't get this off the ground by themselves, and governments can't be the sole entities helping them. Corporations need to help also, and they need to get involved at the ground level.
You see, is Deere taking any kind of, there's obviously a lot of ag companies that are taking an active role in carbon, I mean, very active role, the crop protection, fertilizer companies that are, they control some of the inputs that are having conversations. Is that something that Deere is interested in at all, or, and also, are you in the room with a lot of these conversations? Are you listening to and hearing what's going on, and you have input? Or is a lot of that stuff kind of rolling downhill and you're trying to find ways to adjust? I'm curious.
The first part of your question about are we investing? Yes, right? So I think most of you are familiar with our See and Spray technology. It's got plenty of media attention. It detects weeds and only sprays herbicides on the weeds. Our roadmap for that technology is then around plant health, which is around nitrogen application and being able to do more with less in terms of nitrogen application. So that goes directly for that. So heavy investment in our AI capabilities to unlock that as part of our roadmap.
If that part wasn't clear, the executive said, yes, heavy investment in AI and ag tech is part of our roadmap. So these corporations really are getting involved at the ground level. They're helping growers grow their product better so that they can feed that value up the chain and help quantify carbon sequestration.
You know, are we in all of the right conversations? I think so. So yes, very proactive in talking to input providers and a lot of our retailer customers and partners about this topic and how we go at it together. Because a lot of the conversation with retailers too is about the data as well. And so making sure that the operations center is positioned to document the right types of data that those customers and our customers' customers are looking for.
Now, there's one more thing I want to leave you with from this panel. And that's this idea that from an executive's or a corporate standpoint, carbon markets will, quote, work themselves out eventually. All of these executives seem relatively confident that carbon markets will iron out their own wrinkles. They'll be refined over time, and over time, the key players will figure out how to make them efficient, transparent, and void of conflicts of interest. Where these corporations are really getting involved is at the ground level, especially in an ag retail space, so those who are providing technology and tools to farmers. They want to make sure that they're involved at the ground level so that they can help farmers meet their expectations, so that carbon markets don't have to be a secondary thought. They can be a first thought, something that can bring them profit based on the products they are already producing. Here's one final note.
The more carbon that goes in the soil, the healthier the soil gets, right? And so we've been taking a look at it in that way to say, like, there's just a ton of noise right now about, how much a metric ton of carbon is going to be worth for this, for that, or who's going to pay for it. That'll sort itself out. It just will. Just like any mega trend, it goes through hype cycles and it goes through a couple of pivot points and it sorts itself out.
As we mentioned in our previous episode, sequestration addresses one problem in sustainable agriculture, but markets have the opportunity to address more than just carbon. Soil health, water quality, and other possible incentives rose to the surface as options in addition to carbon sequestration. And that wasn't just in grower conversations. That was in the executive panels too. Another thing I just have to caveat. Carbon markets, even if they work well, are not a cover-all for neutralizing greenhouse gas emissions. There are two kinds of markets, outbound and inbound. Outbound markets don't exactly solve our problem because they involve companies outside of food and agriculture. Inbound markets, on the other hand, reduce the carbon the food industry is emitting into the air. As I said before, carbon markets are nuanced and complicated, but I thought this was important to share. Here's a quick tidbit from Steve Rosenweg, a soil scientist at General Mills, who will be making an appearance in our final episode. This may help you understand a bit more about the complication of carbon markets.
Hello.
Are we back?
Yeah. Where did I lose you at?
I'm sorry I lost you. You were talking about food and agriculture companies being part of INSET. Programs, okay. Inset markets. That was maybe so long
really
ago.
Profound stuff after that. Your question was, is there room for carbon markets in this space, like in regenerative agriculture? And I think yes, but it has to be done right. And a lot of people will lump all carbon markets together as the same thing, but there's a lot of distinctions to be made between the different types of markets that are out there. And one distinction is the difference between insets and offsets, where offsets are what some companies in other sectors can buy to offset their emissions. Whereas insets is basically food and ag companies investing in farmers to reduce their own emissions. Like farmers' emissions are our emissions too. Mm. 61% of General Mills' footprint is in agriculture. And so when we are helping farmers reduce their carbon footprint, that's reducing our carbon footprint too. Mm. And that's what's called an inset as opposed to an offset. So that's one big distinction. And then the other one is just the difference between having a market run by a nonprofit like ESMC versus having a market run by a private company that's trying to also sell something to that farmer. So to answer your question, I would say, yes, there's a right way to do this, but it has to be done. Yes, there is a role for carbon markets, but it has to be done the right way. And it has to be integrated into this more holistic set of support for farmers to really set them up for long-term success and long-term implementation of these regenerative systems so that if that, you know, if that payment goes away, they still understand internally why they should keep going down this path.
Mm. Yeah, that's a great point. I hadn't considered fully the distinction between inset and offset markets. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, sure. And yeah, I just don't think there's enough sort of understanding of that externally. Like every article I read about carbon markets will always just, you know, talk about carbon markets and the risks of them without considering that distinction, because there's definitely big risks in some of those offset markets. The risks are a lot lower to society with an inset market. Mm. And further still, there's lower risks when you have a nonprofit running the market versus kind of a very profit motivated private company.
Right. At the end of the day, I believe that if we work together, we can enable progress and increase the adoption of new practices by bolstering carbon markets, increasing awareness around the benefits of farming for carbon sequestration, and demonstrating their effectiveness for consumers. Thanks for listening to Dialed Up. See you next time.